You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, this is the New Churches Podcast, and my name's Clint Clifton. I'm with my good buddy, John Welborn. Howdy, John.
Hey, Clint.
Glad to have you back. We had another conversation a bit ago on maintenance and multiplication and the tension between those two things. And today, we want to talk about some of the more practical components about what churches that multiply do differently than those churches that don't multiply, those churches that aren't effective at multiplication. So I want to have a conversation about that. Now, Pastor John Welborn, who we're talking to here, he's been married to his wife, Ashley, for over 18 years. They have three children, and John has degrees from Liberty, undergrad from Liberty, then graduate degree from Southeastern Seminary, and just finished a doctoral ministry in evangelism and church planting. And he's, before that, was an itinerant evangelist, and then later a lead pastor of a church in Harrisonburg, Virginia, and for the last 7 years, he's been serving in New York City as pastor of Salem Church in Staten Island. So, John, thanks so much for being here. John's a big sports nut, and he likes to play golf and all kinds of other sports, Georgia sports, right?
Primarily, yes. And we're living in the millennial kingdom because I have the championship Braves and the championship Bulldogs. This may never happen again, but I'm living in my best life right now as a sports fan.
Well, I'm happy for you, John. I'm happy for you. Maybe we'll get some of the glow of your glory as we talk about church multiplication now.
Hallelujah.
So John, we want to talk about four particular practices or things today that we see churches doing that are effective or fruitful in church multiplication, and talk about those a little bit as sort of the fundamentals or the exercises of churches that are effective at this. I don't know about you, but my experience is almost every pastor, church planter I'm interacting with and working with intends for his church to multiply, wants his church to multiply, you know, has a really positive posture and demeanor toward church multiplication. Yet very few of them are actually sending out new churches and starting other new churches, even though lots of people want to do that. It's funny, when I go into a room of new church planters, for the last few years, I've been asking the question, hey, how many of you intend for your church to multiply? And almost every hand in the room goes up. I mean, it would be really odd for somebody not to say that they intend mm-hmm. for their church to multiply. Yet, like I said, very few churches are actually able to pull that off. So there's this huge gap between the intention or desire of American evangelical pastors and the practice of evangelical American pastors. And that gap is how hard it is, how difficult it is, and the things that you have to do day to day in order to make it a reality.
So spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak, right?
That is so true. It's so true. And this is, you know, this podcast and New Churches as a whole, the whole thing we do, this is not an attempt to criticize churches who aren't doing this. It's an attempt to cultivate, encourage, empower, help churches that have a desire for it but aren't able to actually pull it off yet. It's you know, we're admitting this is a really challenging, difficult thing that all of us, it's worthy work though. We should all put our hands to. So the first thing I want to talk about a little bit with you is that churches that prioritize multiplication, that do a good job with multiplication, they tend to set aside time every week specifically for the development of new missional leaders. Talk to us about how important you think that is and how you do that at Salem.
Man, this is something you helped me with, my friend, not just in your book, Thresholds, but also in the panel discussion you did as a part of my DMN project. I mean, just emphasizing the essential nature of residency, schools of ministry, ministry training, something that is designed to help members become missional leaders. Because before that, we had people raised up from our ministry, but it was very organic and it was very on them. Somebody coming up after a service and saying, "Hey, Pastor, God's called me to the ministry." And I say, "That's great. Let's get together and have coffee and let's start working through what that might mean." And that may land them relocating to seminary, or it may land them, you know, in another role, you know, as a lay leader in various capacities, but it was few and far between. In an established church environment, I think we sort of don't have the urgency that our church planting brothers have on this matter. I think many times those that are planting churches understand the urgency of finding new leaders because of the necessity of those new leaders within the context of their church. That they don't have, they don't raise them up, they don't have them.
Right.
Whereas an established church, you can have the same guy serving, you know, in as an usher for 20, 30 years, the same guy serving as a, you know, as an elder, depending on your governance, you know, for a long, long period of time. You just go back to that same well every time, you know, for that particular role. And so established churches are prone to become very stale in their leadership development because they don't have to be. Now, okay. Salem Church is in New York City. And if you may have heard, there was a pandemic that was centered here in this city for a while, a couple of years ago. And then after that, we have had a mass exodus of people from the city. And those of you that live down in Virginia, like yourself, have seen that exodus in terms of your own population growth. So what happened at Salem is we lost over 50% of our church database to relocations. People just moved away. They gave up on New York City and for whatever reason decided to build their lives elsewhere. And so we were put in a position to say, if we don't raise up new leaders, then we're sunk. So it was almost like a church restart, church replant, that kind of thing too. So based on reading conversations with you and others, we developed what's called the Salem Church Ministry Training Institute, which is has the express stated purpose of transforming church members into missional leaders. And so what we've done with that is just make it a regular part of our discipleship process. So when one of our lead pastors stand on stage at their location, they'll say, "Hey, we're grateful that you're here to worship with us today. The next step in your journey with Salem is to connect with a small group, and then your next step is to connect in the context of a serve team." But we built into that now to say, and if you have a curiosity or maybe even a calling to ministry, we have this thing called the Salem Church Ministry Training Institute that is designed to help you with discern and walk through that calling from the Lord. And it's been amazing. We have had massive responses to that. Dozens of people saying, "I'm in, I want to do that. I need to grow. I need to learn. I need to develop as my leadership." And for us, it's not just for church planting residencies, although church planters are coming, will come through and come out of this. For us, it's also for leaders in different areas of ministry, potential elders in the future, campus pastors, ministry directors, those kind of things too. And it has to be prioritized. It has to be prioritized in time, in what we, you know, what does Stanley say, is what's written on the wall happening down the hall, you know?
Yeah.
Is it not, it's not just a vision. It's also something that's in practical application on a week to week and month to month kind of basis. And we look forward to the first crop of students graduating because we will throw the biggest party that New York City's ever seen for this first graduating class to, because what gets celebrated gets done and people see what we really value here too. So a few thoughts, few observations for what's happening here and the reasoning behind it. But I really, you know, I told you off recording earlier, your challenge to me several, you know, a year ago on this very topic was the impetus for, if we don't have a plan to develop leaders, we don't have any hope of becoming a multiplying church. And so I commend you for your challenge to me, and we're trying to do something with it.
Oh, thanks, John. Well, you know, when I think about what makes a church effective in multiplication, even my own church, the practice weekly, we set aside 2 hours of my weekly schedule from the very beginning for the development of leaders, Wednesday mornings from 8:30 to 10:30. That's what we do. And so developing leaders all around me know that they have, you know, access to time and attention and focus training during that time. And it's amazing, just like you mentioned about, you know, sort of people coming out of the woodwork, you know, churches say regularly in consultation conversations, they'll say things like, "Yeah, we don't have anybody that wants to do that." Well, there's a direct correlation between the reality that you don't have anybody that wants to do that and the fact that you don't say you're spending time developing people for that. It's amazing to me. You offer preaching labs. You offer, you know, we used to offer a course called Exploring Your Call to Mission and Ministry. You put a church planting residency out there, a missional leader cohort out there, and all of a sudden, these people start to emerge and say, I want to learn to preach. I want to learn to go overseas and do mission. I want to learn to do this and do that and create all these environments for next level leaders to be developed. And it's an incredible thing. And sometimes it just starts with the leader putting out the energy, the time, the space in the calendar for those conversations to take place.
Yeah. It's something like calling out the called. If we really believe God is not going to underserve his church, if it's his church to build, not my church to build, he has got people there within the congregation that have a sense of calling to fulfill the mission of your local church. And so as a pastor, it's essential for us to call out the call to cast a vision for what this can look like. Yeah. Where there is no vision, the people perish, as the word says.
That's awesome. You mentioned before our conversation, this will be our second point. So we start with setting aside time for leadership development, making a comprehensive plan and setting aside time on your calendar. But secondly, you mentioned there being clarity around the vision. Talk to us about what you mean by that.
No, absolutely. I think for me, when I came to Salem as the new pastor 7 years ago, they were already a relatively healthy church. They were already sort of maxed out their building. They'd already explored possibilities of relocation or expansion. None of that was an option because of land and how expensive it is to try to do that here in New York City. And so when I came along, I was called to the church specifically because I believe God's vision for my leadership here was to multiply new churches. And so when I stood before them as their candidate, that's what I told them. I said, don't vote on me or vote for me because you like my preaching or you think my family would be a good fit here. Vote for me because you're embracing the new vision that's being laid out for your church. It's a vote to fundamentally change the nature of your church. And if you're an established church pastor out there, you know, and you haven't laid the groundwork for that vision, but yet your heart is in multiplication, then I would encourage you to have this conversation with your elders or your team or whoever it is you're accountable to. Have this conversation if you have a staff with your staff team and really build consensus around the belief and conviction. This is our calling to make disciples and multiply churches to advance the kingdom of God in a specific way. And then cast that crystal clear vision to your people and help them to understand this is the win. This is the goal. This is what we're desiring to do. And if we do nothing else as a church family, we will be about advancing the kingdom of God. And that means church multiplication. Because if you haven't been clear, you're going to deal with constant confusion within the people. Why are we cutting this ministry? Why are we cutting back this budget line over here? Why are we not emphasizing my ministry or my thing or what I think is important? Why are we getting away from some things that we've always done? There has to be a vision that you can always draw people back to and say, compassionately, dear sister, dear brother, this is what we have embraced as our mission. Not to say that what you want is bad. It's not bad. It's just not what we're doing and not what we're called to do.
Yeah. And if you're a new church planter, also, there's a version of that. John's speaking sort of from the established church pastor point of view. But a version of that as a church planter is as you gather your team, crystallizing, communicating that the vision for this new church is not just one new church. And so how that was for us when we planted outside of Quantico, the headquarters of the Marine Corps, we were saying, we're going to use the natural movements, the United States service branches to send people all over the world to multiply churches. That's what this church is going to do. If you like that, join it. If you don't like that, this isn't the right church for you. There's other churches you could go to. And so it tends to gather the sort of people that really resonate with a multiplying vision. So that's that crystal clarity. I totally agree with you. I think there's versions of that in established churches where pastors get to come in on the front end and say, here's what we're going to be about. Hiring me, a vote for me is a vote for this. And then also in new churches, you can set that in the beginning by crystallizing or clarifying that vision from day one. Another component, another thing I see happening in churches that do this really well, that do multiplication really well, is the pastor's willingness not just to set aside a block of time in the calendar, but to also make their lives available generally to developing leaders. That means that, you know, if you're introverted, then and you prefer to go to events and conferences and sorts of things like that yourself. If you like to be in the hotel room by yourself when you travel, if you like to do all that stuff kind of by yourself, that you're going to be pressed a little bit to always have people around you. But I would challenge you to think about our two missionary models in the New Testament, Jesus and the Apostle Paul. There's one thing in common between these two guys that they were both known for that was unique and distinct, and that was that they were always rolling deep. They always had a big group of people around them. They were always finding every instance that they were involved in as an opportunity for training. I just think about the time where Jesus sees some little kids nearby playing, and he uses an opportunity to teach faith to his disciples, or when he's in the temple and he sees a woman make a contribution of two small coins, and he sees it as an opportunity to teach his disciples about generosity. Those sorts of things happened in the context of everyday life, and those are the real money teaching opportunities. And so those leaders that have their lives open, they often are more effective.
No doubt. I'm thinking of 2 Timothy 2. Paul says, the things you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, commit those to faithful men who will be able to teach others also. You got four generations of disciples in that one verse. You have to open your life. I mean, you really, really, really do. You have to open your life, because discipleship, as it relates to being a spiritual leader, being a pastor, church planter, is more than just a classroom informational setting. It's transformation. It's transformation. My friend James Roberson planted over here in Brooklyn. He came and preached for me at Salem a few years ago. My people are still saying this, is discipleship is not being able to quote the teacher. It's about being like the teacher. It's not just about quoting the content of the teacher. It's about modeling the life of the teacher. And that's what you see in the disciples of Jesus, and that what you see in Paul and his sons in the faith, Timothy and Titus and others that he invested in. So I'm not an extrovert. I mean, I'm not an introvert. I'm an extrovert to the core. So usually me, quiet private time with me is usually me and my wife hanging out. Like, that's as quiet and private as I need it, because I love people. I love being around people nonstop. So if you're an introvert, you know, it's going to require some comfort zone issues for you as well. For me as the extrovert, I need to be able to get deep with 1, 2, 3 people and not just always want to have crowds of people around all the time. But opening your life, making yourself accessible, your dinner table, you know, finding ways to make yourself accessible and lean into the lives of those that you're leading more than just in a professional setting, I think is absolutely key. Absolutely key.
That's powerful.
It demystifies it too, Clint. That's one of the things. New York City is a professional city, much like DC. It's a professional city. So a pastor is seen the same as like a priest, or sometimes like a lawyer, a doctor, a dentist. Like, we're a profession that people respect. And therefore, there's a mysticism about it, that people perceive that I walk on clouds and I have a halo around my head and, you know, I never belch or something. You know what I mean? Like, there's just... And people need to demystify the spiritual leadership to say, I'm a guy. I'm just like you, with a calling on my life, like you have a calling on your life. And we need to fulfill that calling to the glory of God.
Because people can't imagine themselves becoming what you are until they are – it's not mystical to them anymore until they can understand it and see then how normal it is.
Absolutely.
We used to always say to our residents in our church that we want to do church in such a way that the average Joe looks up at the stage in our church and says, I could totally do that. And so that means that we're not trying to impress people. We're trying to do things simply well.
Yeah.
And so we talked about setting aside time every week for developing leaders. We talked about crystallizing our vision, making sure that we're crystal clear about what it is that we're aiming toward and aim toward multiplication in church planting. We talked about the pastor's willingness to open their lives up to those who are developing as leaders, not just in those formal times around the table, but also in those informal times at traveling or at home or in everyday ministry settings. But lastly, I want to mention that there's a financial component to it too. And so talk to us a little bit about the financial component.
One of the best leadership life lessons I received was from a pastor in Virginia when I was there. He was much older than me. He said, as it relates to finance specifically, and it applies to ministry, he said, John, you can have anything you want. You just can't have everything you want. Like, you can have anything, you just can't have everything. And what he was saying is prioritize. So if you want to drive a nice car, that's fine. You can drive a nice car, but you might have to cut back in other areas to have that nice car, or vice versa. In church ministry, you can have anything you want. You just can't have everything you want. So if you prioritize church multiplication as an essential element of the vision that God has given to you in your local church, then it's going to cost you something. You know, I do a lot of traveling and preaching, Clint, and I get, because my life is, I came out of Southern megachurch culture in Atlanta. So that's where I go preach a lot. I go back and preach at some of the largest, you know, churches in our denomination. And sometimes I get really, really jelly, you know, I mean, seriously jealous of their massive buildings and their incredible technology and their marketing strategies and their enormous staff teams. And I'll come back and my wife and I will sit around my fire pit in the back behind our little house. And I'll say, I'll never have that. Like there's no way that ever exists on Staten Island. There's no way that ever exists in the context of my church. Mm-hmm. And what we have to come back to is not that that's bad. It's just not what we're called to do. Right. And so in order to embrace a culture of multiplication, it is essential that we understand we may not ever have the greatest technology. We may not have the largest staff teams. We may never have all the things that other churches may have, but it's for a purpose. It's for a reason. I've got people carrying multiple roles and wearing multiple hats for a very good reason. It's because those are sacrifices we are making to advance the kingdom, to provide to each neighborhood in my borough of my city what they need most, which is a gospel preaching church. And so it's okay. We can work with what we have and be comfortable with the deficiencies of other areas because it is for a purpose. You can have anything you want. You just can't have everything you want.
That's incredible. Great advice. John, talking to you is always helpful. I walk away from our conversations with all these new ideas. And so thank you so much for putting your energy and your attention and your brilliant mind toward church multiplication. I pray that you are wildly fruitful in New York City and beyond in multiplying churches. Thanks so much.
My brother, I appreciate the opportunity. It's been a joy to talk to you. You're a friend and a mentor and a brother I deeply love.
Thanks, man.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.